His mailing address is Okeechobee, but really, physically, he lives right on the edge of the Brighton Reservation. And so his poetry reflects his everyday experience on the job. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to Mr. Rigdon.
Let me borrow that little bag over there by my chair. Mr. Everett left that for you. The old bull started calling as night was slowly falling. Three short wails echoing through the timber, and in the eerie dusk it made me shiver. I could barely see him as he come out. He ambled into the open and slowly looked about. He was the last heretic on the place, the one old mossback that always eluded our chase. I sat back in awe at the size of that sun and remembered how every game we played he won. At no matter what we ever tried to do, he always come out ahead in whatever ensued. Completely drawn a blank. I said, "Someday, you old rip," as into the woods I watched him slip. But that was one I just wrote, because I mean, if you ever have heard a bull bellowing through the woods, especially just at dark or at night, if you didn't know what it was, it'd raise a hair on the back of your neck. It sounds unearthly. But I've oftentimes thought about the different things that we get to see and hear in our everyday work that most people don't ever get to see. And I was patching fence one evening, and I just got listening to the crickets, and I thought about out on the fence line. The stillness enters my mind as the crickets sing their goodbyes to the setting sun. The occasional cry of a far-off cow, I can almost see them now. The Spanish conquistadors amazed at the land that has now become too populated by man. The wind blows through the trees with a slight passing breeze. This is the real Florida. It's home. Far from the cities where thousands roam. This is Florida the way it should be. Peace, quiet, the cows, the fence, and me. This is one I've really written recently, and I really like it, so I'm going to do it again, even though I've done it several times this weekend. Everybody seems to enjoy it. They really couldn't believe it, although he seemed sincere, this New York Yankee that come to work one year. He grew up with Westerns, watching Gene and Roy, told them all his life he wanted to be a cowboy. He knew of Del Vecchio, the bull rider from the Bronx. He listened to country music and had gone to honky-tonks. From an online auction, he had bought a used saddle and two or three books on the different breeds of cattle. Now, why he come to Florida, no one could rightly say. They figured he'd have headed west to learn the cowboy way. He told them he wanted work of the lifelong dream to ride the range as part of a cattle-gathering team. The foreman was dubious. It was calving season. Normally, to hire a new man, he wouldn't see a reason. But the Yankee was in luck, 'cause Bill had just quit. And the foreman had no choice but to see if he would fit. He couldn't use a whip, and he didn't know how to rope. After hours of teaching, the cow crew gave up hope. They asked if he could ride, and the Yankee said, "Of course." And so he sat astraddle of a thoroughly broken horse. Their cracker speech was a foreign tongue to his pale northern ears, and his Queensboro language pattern was subject to taunts and jeers. Of course he understood English. This Yankee wasn't dense. But in the air between them there existed a verbal fence. The foreman took him on his round and at a hammock's edge, instructed him to ride south to the Palmetto Ledge. for him to ride through it and to cut through the cabbage trees, skirting through some cypress and to watch out for the knees. West from the cypress, ride to the pine head. Watch for the ditch lizard. Your horse don't like the dead. There's a hammock near the cow pens. We'll meet the other side. The cow crew foreman left him there, and the Yankee started his ride. The terms the boss had used concerned the Yankee some. He worried about falling off when to the ledge he'd come. Abruptly stepping off an edge vexed his fearful soul. His horse scared him half to death when he stepped in a bull hole. As he rode along further, there was blowing a cool breeze, and he contemplated thoroughly what kind of cabbage grew in trees. Though he didn't know it, he come through where the foreman said, and searched the area expectantly to see a giant head. An ancient sight, a totem pole, he expected to behold, like something off of Easter Island, a Seminole relic of old. He rode into a stand of pine, but he never saw the head. He come upon a cattle trail and followed where it led. Ditch lizard puzzled the man. He thought to ask them later. While ruminating upon this term, he never saw the gator. His horse's nose caught the stench and then launched him in the air. He impacted swiftly with the earth, his arm in prickly pear. A string of cuss words left his mouth, poetically it seemed. The art of such vulgarity has every sailor dreamed. Concluding his obscenities, he retrieved the final spine. When Gopher come upon the scene, returning Yank's equine. The Yankee mounted sheepishly and continued on his way, muddled still by the terms, his thoughts in disarray. Bewildered though he was sure he'd recognize a hammock hanging in the air between the earth and skies. But he saw no hammock, just some trees and cattle all astir, and round the cows he plainly seed where the cowmen were. When Yank joined them round the herd, Jim saw a pregnant cow. He tried to calve. Hooves were out. She needed helping now. Well, Gopher roped and choked her. Jim went to tail her down. And it was here that what occurred gave the Yank renown. A simple word assailed his ears. He didn't have to fake. He understood implicitly its meaning, no mistake. Jim had hollered, "Mug the cow." The Yankee pulled his knife, looked at her with gritted teeth, "Your wallet or your life." Now, I mentioned the term ditch lizard, which obviously y'all figured out it was the gator. But speaking of that, my brother was telling me about a time he was working over at Carlton's out from Fort Pierce. And they had, you know, bunched up the cows and the dogs were pretty hot. And one of the dogs went over to a little water hole and was swimming out in the circle, you know, out in the middle trying to get cooled off. And he's swimming around. All of a sudden, a 10-foot gator pops up and grabs him. My brother's sitting there on the bank and said he squealed like a little girl. Ah! Turn him loose! Turn him loose! And that gator turned him loose. Swim! 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 And the gator caught him again. Turn him loose! Turn him loose! And the gator turned him loose. Swim! 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 The gator caught that dog three times and he finally got to the bank. He had a few holes on his rump, but he's okay. Mr. Sharp.
I would have loved to have had a larger crowd. Y'all are lovely people, and I'm happy to be here. But I'd love to have had a larger crowd, because this is the first time I've ever been here, and I am here in November because of what happened in May. And I didn't write this last night. I wrote it in the last 6 months. I don't remember when, because I'm not one of those people that can do it overnight. But this is what I'm going to do for you people. And I hope that y'all understand where I'm coming from. It's called range fire. Lightning cracked across that sky. like veins on the back of your hand. Poked a fiery finger out as if in reprimand, and torched a crippled cottonwood that leaned against the sky, while sage and grass hunkered down that hellish hot July. That cottonwood exploded and shot its burning seeds like comets into kerosene, igniting all the weeds. The air was thick as dog's breath when that fire peat hit the ground. It licked its pyrogenic lips, and then it looked around. The prairie lay defenseless in the pathway of that beast. It seemed to search the further hills, and then it pointed east, then charged like some blind arsonist, some heathen hell on wheels, with its felonious companion, the wind, hot on its heels. The varmints ran like lemons in the shadow of the flame, while high above a red-tailed hawk flew circles, taking aim. And he spied a frazzled prairie dog and banked into a dive. But the stoker saw him coming and fried them both alive. It slid across that surface like a molten oil slick. It ran down prey and predator, the quiet and the quick. The killdee couldn't trick it. It was cinders in a flash. And the bones of all who faced it soon lay smoking in the ash. The antelope and the cricket, the birds and the bee, the butterfly and the badger, the rattlesnake, the flea. It was faster than a rabbit. It was faster than a fawn. They danced inside that dragon's mouth like puppets, then were gone. It offered up no quarter, and it burnt for 7 days. 100,000 acres were consumed within that blaze. Brave men come out to kill it, cutting trail after trail, but it jumped their puny firebreaks and scattered them like quail. It was ugly from a distance, and it was uglier up close, so said the man who saw the greasy belly of the ghost. It made them cry for mama, melted tracks off D8 cats. It sucked the sweat right off of their backs and broke the thermostats. It was hotter than a burning brake, as heavy as a train, and louder than them nightmare screams of Abel's brother Cain. It was war with nature's fury, unleashed upon the land, enormous, uncontrollable, it held the upper hand. The men retrenched repeatedly, continuously bested. Then on the seventh day, like Genesis, it rested. The black-faced firefighters stared, unable to believe. They watched them little wisps of smoke, mistrusting their reprieve. They knew they hadn't beaten it. They knew without a doubt, though the news TV told it different, they knew it just went out. Must have tired of devastation, grew jaded to the fame, simply bored to death with Holocaust, and walked out of the game. You say that's crazy. Fire is not a living thing. It's only chance combustion. There's no malice to that sting. You can go to sleep unworried, knowing man is in control. These little freaks of nature have no evil in their soul. But rest assured, it's out there, and the powder's always primed. It will be back. You know it. It's only biding time. Until that range turns into kindling and that grass turns into thatch. And some fallen angel tosses out a solitary match. Those are the kind that you don't like to do. You don't like to have the cause to do. And I'm sure next May, now they were very fortunate that this beautiful park area here was not touched. But it was so close and they were so concerned about all you nice people that y'all didn't need to be here. And it worked out better because the Forestry Service and all these people, they needed to be working themselves on other things. Protect what the taxpayers have got. Here's what you want to do. The weather hasn't been the best. Hasn't been bad. When we think it's bad, it rained at my house. The last time it rained at my house, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And I got 0.2 inches. John, I'm telling you right. It's so dry at my house that I got 2 trees in the yard that's fighting over the dog. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. There's a saying around the ranches, they don't know in Washington, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Seems they've got it turned around. For every time the government finds something that's working out just right, they'll just naturally microscope it till some problem comes to sight. They'll punch it and study it and write a grant or two, and when it's plumb eviscerated, this is what they'll do. They'll form a new bureaucracy and write an EIS. And then they'll hire appoint 3 new committees to sort out this awful mess. They'll hire 20 city lawyers and 2 judges to go along. And then they'll check with all the protest groups to see where they've gone wrong. They'll hold 90 open hearings, spending fabulous amounts, then throw your ideas out the window because John Doe Rancher damn sure don't count. They'll ask the House and Senate for a fact-finding junket to see if their new plan is going to pass the test or flunk it. They'll hold 90 open hearings that they want to know exactly what you need to change to make your taxes grow. They'll hire a bunch of people to check this out because they're going to put all of these findings in front of a brand new clerk. But they'll have to, without doubt, show you the way to mortgage your house so you can get your taxes paid. Now, they're going to hire a bunch of people to be facilitators, and for every 2 and 3 of them, they're going to be a new administrator. They're going to build a brand new building down in Washington, D.C., and if everything goes just right, they'll send reports to you and me. Now, the moral of my story, it really ain't no joke. Don't ever tell the government if what you've got ain't broke. I'm giving Doyle a little rest. His throat's sore, and I'm gonna run a little longer than I should here. You got to take care of the boy because he's got to carry me later on. Little piece called Rancher's Revenge and a geography lesson at the same time. If you think I'm lying to you, go to the house, get the map and U.S. map and look it up. We'd worked all day branding calves, and then we took a rest. And Buck opened up a six-pack, and Doyle drug the snuff out of his vest, and we started in to contemplate the problems of the day. Some stretched out on feed sacks, and others on piles of hay. Buck said to me, he said, "Old man, you've been running steers for over 50 years. I said, "Yeah." "And this cattle ranching now would bring a man to tears. Some people say that beef's too high. Some says it causes cancer. And any bureaucrat you ask is going to have a different answer. They'll pay you not to raise your corn. They'll buy another's cheese. They'll pay you not to milk your cows, and they'll turn loose half of your bees." And my son heard broadcast on the radio the other night that there are just too many cows, and this is the rancher's plight. It seems some feller took a count. Now, don't this beat the band? He said there are 9 billion cows that live upon this land. My son Sam did some ciphering, and he said, "Daddy, looky here. What if them 9 million cows was one gigantic steer? That critter'd weigh 1 million ton. Dad, he'd reach from coast to coast. He'd eat 90,000 ton of hay. But, Daddy, what I like the most, we could put his off hind foot in Buffalo, the front one in Tacoma, and the near hind foot in Jacksonville, and the fourth one in Pomona. And after he ate all that hay, wouldn't it raise a fuss if that steer did to Washington what Washington's done to us?" I thought you'd appreciate that. Pardon? Oh, I've got a request here. And I will, you ugly rascals, if you had a request, I'd just ignore you, but this comes from pretty ladies. They want me to do one called AARP. And y'all are old enough to appreciate this. And I'm guilty of it. It's not here, it's over in a truck, but I'm guilty of it. As of late, there has been a modest debate concerning the wearing of furs. And some even swear anybody who wears is flawed in their character. But others will fight to maintain the right to wear what they dang well please. But the answer lies in a compromise which sets both minds at ease. Now just imagine two folks with opposite... Imagine two friends at opposite ends who meet to do lunch once a week, and their friendship is tried as they gather outside that Beverly Hills boutique. "Sophie, oh my soul, is that a mink stole? Please tell me it's fake from Goodwill." "No, Babs, it's a mink, but it's not what you think, because it's designer roadkill. Surely you scoff, but don't blow it off. That is the wisdom of Solomon's voice. The perfect solution, it grants absolution, yet leaves the owner pro-choice. And wisdom so pure should forever endure and percolate into your soul. So I'm the head jack of the animal accident Recovery Patrol. I'm the head jack of the Animal Accident Recovery Patrol. Doyle and me is out on that road every night to gently remind you that mess left behind you is more than a buzzard's delight. So carry a shovel, a trowel for mammal or fowl to pick up your vehicular blooper. In time you will find yuck is just in your mind. It's no worse than a pooper scooper. And you'd be amazed how activists praise you for doing what you think is right. And no trapper will object if you stop to collect things that go in the night. Now, treat it with care. Harm not a hair. Be sorry, but don't sit and pine. Because accidents happen when we're both overlapping that yellow center line. So salvage your plunder and render your blunder into a warm winter coat. And remember our motto, which you know you ought to, and it follows as herein I quote. Make it a habit to pick up your rabbit. Don't leave him to dry in the sun. For the sake of a garment, recycle that varmint. It's tacky to just hit and run. That's it. In case y'all don't know, I have a little program here. I don't necessarily follow it, but I don't try to memorize the program. I write a little something down, and I'll go with it. Now, this little piece I'm going to share with you, I'm on the government now. If you really want to know, I'm on them. Called First Day on the Job. Now, this old rancher was out there cleaning out an old meandering drain because it would flood his corrals every time he had a heavy rain. And about that time, a wildlife pickup come easing through the gate, then raced across that field like a fire truck running late. It pulled up to the rancher, and a pretty young girl got out. And her badge was bright and shiny, and she began to look around. She looked down at the rancher, and she said, "You can't do that. This drain could be declared endangered species habitat." He said, "Now, looky here, miss. This ranch is mine, you see." "That's all right," she said, "sir, but endangered species belong to me." He said, "I've been a-cleaning this old drain for 30 years or more, and there ain't nobody ever stopped and raised a fuss with me before. I'm just trying to make a living, make ends meet, you see, and I don't know why in the hell the government ain't paying you to look after me." Now, she listened intently, but had this puzzled look, opened up that truck door, and pulled out her species book. She said, "I have read this book from front to back. Not one page did I miss. Sir, I think I can assure you, you are not on this list." Yeah. Yes, sir. Hey, let me tell you something. While you're wrapping, wrap me a couple of half-fried chickens and two baked potatoes to go with it. Hey, I've enjoyed talking to y'all.
Thank you. Carl Sharp and Doyle Rigdon. Thanks a million, guys. Thanks a million. They will be back.